Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 54. It's July 14th, 2020. Toward the end of February, in the first class cabin of a United flight from Hawaii to Los Angeles, the only man on the planet who has hosted late night talk shows, appeared on late night talk shows, and created an iconic TV series that parodied a late night talk show, encountered the man who had just been famously ousted from a late night talk show. Gary Shandling was in 1A. Conan O'Brien and his family were three rows back. The two men are close friends, and their unexpected proximity made Shandling happy. So happy, he says, that he asked a flight attendant to deliver O'Brien a present. Mr. Shandling can't finish his cookie, and he thought you might want to have the rest, the woman told O'Brien, presenting the crumb-littered plate. Minutes later, Shandling looked up, way up, to see the 6'4" redhead planted in front of him, an exaggerated scowl on his face. "This is the way you treat me with the broken cookies?" O'Brien asked Shandling, his voice slightly raised to make sure the comedy could be heard over the jet engines. "When I let you in line with me and my wife and get your ticket 10 minutes earlier, this is what you do?" "Let me see if I understand this correctly," Shandling responded, almost yelling. "I, out of the generosity of my heart, offer you food, and you have the nerve to walk up to my aisle and harass me and heckle me in front of this passenger," Shandling nodded to the stranger in 1B, "who I don't know." O'Brien turned to Shandling's stunned neighbor, who will surely be dining out on this story for the rest of his life. "I'm sorry you have to sit next to him," O'Brien said. "You know, if you call ahead and you find out Gary's on the plane, they will allow you to switch seats." It was a coincidence, these two funny men being on the Big Island at the same time. Shandling, who had recently completed final reshoots on his first acting role in years, a U.S. senator in Iron Man 2, was enjoying one of his frequent retreats to the Waipio Valley, his favorite place, to meditate and ponder the universe. While he stopped short of calling himself a Buddhist, he's a serious student of Dharma. O'Brien, who just weeks before had parted ways with NBC and The Tonight Show, was on what is perhaps best described as a forced vacation. The timing was synchronistic, Gary says, recalling that they hung out so much in Hawaii that Conan's wife was jealous. "We were able to spend some time chatting about the turtles and anything else that might be going on in our lives," Shandling says as we stand in the kitchen of the vast Spanish-style home where he lives alone in the hills above the West Los Angeles enclave of Brentwood. You can see the distant ocean out the window, past a grassy oasis in Gary's rock-lined pool. He looks tan and fit, if a little rumpled, in an untucked striped button-down, baggy cargo pants with a tiger emblazoned on one leg, and beige Prada sneakers. When I press, he acknowledges that yes, the topic of O'Brien's future came up. "Conan's completely free now," Gary says, with a solemnity more guru-like than you'd expect from someone who got famous making jokes about his hair. "He doesn't have to fit into someone else's mold." But what Gary really wants to talk about is that hand-me-down cookie. "I'd eaten half, and the other half was in tiny crumbles and pieces," he says, delighted. Asked what kind of cookie, oatmeal, chocolate chip, he adjusts his black baseball cap and takes off. "I asked the same question, and they said it's an airplane cookie, and I didn't want to ask what that was exactly. I was frightened. A beat. I was in a situation once over the water where they said they were having a technical problem with my cookie. I said, 'Oh my God, what are you going to do?' They said, 'We're going to have to switch cookies. Give us 10 minutes. He's not merely riffing. It turns out the man who is widely credited with redefining the sitcom, introducing self-referential humor to the masses, and paving the way for Seinfeld, The Office, and Curb Your Enthusiasm has been working hard on something new. I have this very abstract idea in my head," he confides. "I wouldn't even want to call it stand-up, because stand-up conjures in one's mind a comedian with a microphone standing on stage under a spotlight telling jokes to an audience. That kind of comedy is fine," he says, "but for him, it's in the past. Shandling is striving to exist, and thus to be funny, completely in the moment. The direction I'm going in is eventually you won't know if it's a joke or not," he explains, describing his new act, which he has been quietly testing in clubs, where his name never appears on the marquee. "What I want to happen is that I talk for an hour, and the audience doesn't realize that it is funny until they're driving home. Every Sunday, he's in Los Angeles. Shandling calls the game for noon. The invitation-only crowd gathers in his kitchen to drink coffee, and at 12:30, everyone heads out the patio doors, past the pool, and down a series of steps into the lower yard. As is the custom, the first person to reach the half court grabs a leaf blower and sweeps it clean. Then they play 3-on-3 to 7 points, win by 2. When only the regulars show, they include Sarah Silverman, Kevin Nealon, David Duchovny, and Friday Night Lights creator Peter Berg. No one sits out for long. Other times you're lucky to get on the court. Sacha Baron Cohen and Adam Sandler have played, as have Ben Stiller and Billy Crystal. Judd Apatow plays infrequently, but only, he says, because Sarah's better than me, and it's shameful for me as a man to accept that. The sweat, the speed, the lack of pretense, it gets sort of elemental. It's stripped down, says Peter Tolan, one of Gary's best friends and a former chief writer on The Larry Sanders Show, Shandling's pioneering meta-comedy on HBO. People show themselves truthfully in a time of competition, and that's what he's interested in. After a few hours, Shandling leads everyone up to the house to eat takeout and watch sports on TV. There is no agenda at Camp Gary, as Silverman calls it, but it's not a party. Shandling is adamant about that. Instead, it's something of an incubator. Aficionados of Sanders may recall an episode in which Duchovny, playing himself, admits to having sexual feelings for Sanders. That's just one moment of TV genius that was hatched on Shandling's court. I was guarding him, Duchovny recalls, and you know, my pelvis was near his rear end, which happens sometimes when you're guarding a man, and I said, it'd be funny if I had a crush on you, but I was straight. I don't know what that means, but that seems like it would be funny. And Gary said, yeah, your instincts are good. Gary's always talking about your instincts. Conan's not the only one to use Shandling as a sounding board. For the past 5 years, especially, the 60-year-old comic who counts both George Carlin and Johnny Carson as mentors has devoted himself to mentoring others. A generation of people at the top creative rungs of Hollywood credit Shandling with shaping both their material and their careers. There are so many people who lean on him to be their sage in these matters of what's dramatic, not just what's funny, but what's effective and what's real, and why that's funny is what's real, and why what's funny is what's real, says Robert Downey Jr., who compares Shandling to a Jewish E.T. He's kind of vulnerable while at the same time very probing, and he's got serious opinions. Iron Man 2 director Jon Favreau dubs him the Godfather. Baron Cohen sought Shandling's advice on both Borat and Bruno. Silverman says Shandling taught her how to embrace the silences during her stand-up act. And Apatow still counts the night Shandling hired him to write jokes for the 1991 Grammy Award show as the biggest break of my career. Apatow later wrote for this Larry Sanders Show, and their collaboration continues. Shandling often attends table reads of Apatow's films and gives notes on the scripts. Apatow says Shandling had a monumental effect on the 40-year-old virgin. There's nobody better in the world than Gary at telling me what's working and what's not, Apatow says. I'm just very lucky that I've had his input. Shandling says his collaboration with talented friends only leads him farther along his own path towards mindfulness. Not long ago, he had a circular Enso inked on the back of his neck. It means ego emptiness, impermanence, he says. We're in the living room, checking out his speakers, a 6-foot-tall pair of Alexandria X2 Wilsons that he calls the best rock and roll speakers in the world, when he leans forward to show me the tattoo. It mimics what you see, he says. If you take incense in a dark room and you twirl it fast, it looks like a solid circle, and it isn't. Downey likens being with Shandling to watching plates twirling on the top of sticks that are balanced on the tops of other twirling plates. I know what he means. When I asked Gary why he chose Iron Man 2 as his comeback movie, here are the topics he explores on his way to an answer. The emotional pull of the Olympic Games. A recent boxing match at Madison Square Garden. The Dalai Lama's admission that he dreams about sex. The importance of being aware. The unmarried status of the greatest religious leaders. The appeal of powerful women. The 4 ulcers he had by 1998. After the 6th and final season of The Larry Sanders Show, how it feels to land a punch, the difficulty some men have expressing emotion, his love of Jerry Seinfeld, his respect for the Coen brothers, his disdain for cynicism, his fondness for the Vietnamese Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, dogs, the familiarity of every noise in his home, and the way his mother answered him when he, as a child, he asked what she thought of him. "What do you think of me?" is what my mother said. It was a stalemate. "I'm coming back to you," he reassures me, sensing that I'm lost. When I give notes on a script, I say, "Guys, I may drift, but it's part of the process." So I'm aware that I'm drifting, but I'm grabbing a lot of stuff. It takes 50 minutes, but eventually he answers, except that all of it is the answer. Okay, I'll stop there for a second. I'd love to read this entire article. It's called The Comedian's Comedian's Comedian, written by Amy Wallace for GQ in August of 2010. She has another incredibly poignant piece on Gary Shandling after he died. We'll come back to those, this article and that one later, probably. And she's written a number of other profiles and interviews with comedy greats. It's good stuff. I do, though, also want to read this additional little biographical part, three quick paragraphs. Shandling grew up in Tucson, where his mom, Muriel, ran a pet shop, and his dad, Irving, was a printer. His older brother, Barry, died of cystic fibrosis when Gary was 10, and he said he thinks the loss made him contemplate things most kids don't have to. Gary studied electrical engineering at the University of Arizona, then switched to marketing, he says, because he couldn't bear the thought of actually being an engineer. The less demanding major left him with more free time, which he filled by writing comedy routines as a test to see if I could do it. One day in 1968, he heard that George Carlin, then a superstar, would be performing in Phoenix, a two-hour drive away. Shandling had never been in a nightclub, but he tracked Carlin down. He was standing by the bar. I said, "Hi, Mr. Carlin, my name is Gary Shandling, and I wrote some routines for you." Carlin was polite. He wrote all his own stuff, he said, but if Shandling would come back tomorrow, he'd look his jokes over and they could talk. Shandling drove home to Tucson, then turned right around the next day and drove back. After that night's show, Shandling recalls, "He takes me into the back room, which is like the clubs where I work now, and there's my material on this little table with marks on it." Carlin walked him through the 20 or so pages one at a time, and then he said, "You're very green, but there's something funny on each page." Very earnestly, Carlin added, "If you're thinking of pursuing this, I would." And that's also a classic bit. Classic bit. Gary Shandling, the young guy, marketing student, I suppose, or perhaps working in advertising earlier in his career. I don't remember exactly where this falls. And has the guts to get in his car, drive 2 hours, and approach George Carlin, whom he's never met, and show him 20 pages of jokes he's written for him. That's pretty cool. And then to go back the next night and to get that one sentence turned his whole life. I guess it's two sentences. "You're very green, but there's something funny on each page. If you're thinking of pursuing this, I would." Now, George Carlin, also, this isn't like his mom telling him to pursue it or his best friend. He's managed to get in front of George Carlin and ask. That's really quite something, and thankfully he did pursue it because he produced just a ton of incredible stuff. And Shandling is certainly a hero. If you haven't seen The Larry Sanders Show, I would say stop down. Go get it. Go find it. It's probably on HBO Now or something like that. HBO On Demand, HBO Max, whatever they call their thing these days. And there was a DVD series made that's also great. I don't think it's necessarily the best of. It's not the full series either. But what's great about those DVDs is Shandling went back and spent time with a number of people who had been on the show or wrote for the show. So he hangs out with Jeanine Garofalo and Judd Apatow, Sarah Silverman, other people. I remember, too, in the Judd Apatow bit, and they may be on his basketball court, referenced in this article when they're having this conversation, and they immediately kind of get into an argument. They revive a big debate they had apparently back in the day making the Larry Sanders show, and Apatow is giving Gary a hard time for eliminating a joke that Apatow had written, cutting it, that Gary wouldn't allow it in the show. And he said, you know, you were just wrong. That was funny. And Shandling gives it right back. It says, no, you still don't understand. It was funny. I said at the time it was funny. That was never the issue. It was wrong for Hank's character. Hank would never do that. Hank would never say that. That kind of thing. And it was really cool that years hence, with many other giant successes in their careers, they still went right back there. They really cared about it that much, and it's still that fresh, and that's just what they love to do. This is their craft, and they're sort of experts and continuing to sharpen their swords, arguing with each other about it. Really cool stuff. Gary Shandling is sort of a hero, an exemplar. He was he took the form of the late night talk show and really got inside it, and the parody and the satire of it all, and of our culture as a result, are really interesting, and he's absolutely hilarious. And I love also the idea of his having regulars at a Saturday basketball game, pickup basketball game, 3-on-3, 1st to 7, and then afterwards watch sports, eat takeout, and that sort of collaborative circle is inspiring. And I think we all need those things. We went through a little bit at the very beginning of Talent Code yesterday about deliberate practice, just barely touching on it. And that author, Daniel Coyle, had a follow-up book to the Talent Code called The Culture Code that has a lot to do with groups as opposed to a single individual and the deliberate practice of an individual. Talent Code has a lot to say about groups as well, but Culture Code is expressly about that sort of stuff. And there's a wonderful book called Collaborative Circles that looks at the Inklings and groups of poets and groups of psychologists, psychiatrists, and how they collaborate and compete. And clearly that was going on at Shandling's weekend basketball games. And for all of us in our work to have those kinds of people, he citing sort of Carlin and Carson as mentors of Gary Shandling, he was certainly spent the last years of his life generously giving back, helping comedians and, you know, dramatic movies and as well. It's just awesome stuff to picture. It must just try to imagine the environment, the atmosphere of that pickup basketball game and hanging out with those folks. You can definitely do a deep dive on Gary Shandling and YouTube, and there's some really great stuff. Comedians, some of the best, like to talk to each other about what they do, and of course it's just funny while they're just sitting around riffing. They're just hilarious by nature and honed over ridiculous amounts of practice. And there's something about stand-up comedy, isn't there, that you have an individual and a microphone. That's it. They can't hide behind music. They can't hide behind production effects, you know, graphics. It's an individual and a light and a microphone on a stage. A couple of friends here in Austin have done some open mic stuff, and just incredibly brave, because you're trying to make people laugh. You're trying to make people think. And the best of the best are just amazing to see. Dave Chappelle right now, Chris Rock and Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor, clicking back through in my mind in time. And also somebody like Bill Hicks, just incredibly incisive commentary, so funny. And it at times also so punishing. Just great, just amazing stuff. With Gary Shandling being as sort of cerebral, philosophical as he was, a lot of his discussions with his peers, mentors, mentees, that kind of thing, it's just fascinating. Great stuff. There's some great stuff. And Ricky Gervais went through and had a great, it's kind of a famous interview with him because it went off the rails, got very awkward. It's discussed in this Amy Wallace piece. It's worth watching. Ricky Gervais also spent time with Larry David. It's just wonderful stuff. And again, all of those, the DVD commentary stuff, I'll go look real quick here in a second. If I can find some of that, if it's made its way to YouTube, I'll put it in the show notes at regular.fm/54. And if you like this kind of inside baseball stuff, there's a bunch of great books about these comedians. And there's a couple too. He, you know, in the very beginning of this, he's interacting with Conan right after he lost the Tonight Show. And there was a man, journalist, his name's Bill Carter, and he loves to cover this sort of stuff and gets also into the production and business aspects of these things. And he wrote the book, you may remember, The Late Shift. It's about the battle between Leno and Letterman at that time. And then he wrote a later book called The War for Late Night that has Fallon and Conan and all that kind of stuff. It's just fascinating stuff. There's so much great stories in there. And there's really something about these comedians and studying them, but Gary Shandling in particular, and his notion of trying to be able to get up on stage and just talk for an hour. And for it to feel different to the audience than your typical stand-up. He really did spend a lot of time thinking about the forms and the mediums that coalesce around these kinds of things. And he loved blurring all of that and playing with all of those variables. So that kind of artistry is really important in so many domains. And he was such a great exemplar at seeing the forms and the mediums and wringing those boundaries and structures for humor also. Brilliant stuff. His comment about he wants people to be driving home and then realize that there were jokes in there is basically exactly Bill Murray's character, I forget his character's name, in Tootsie, talking about his play. And Tootsie, just genius. Also, a piece, you know, that's inside baseball, that's about the world inside the production of entertainment. So anyway, for this morning, here's hoping that you've got your 20 pages of jokes that you're working on, and that when the moment comes, you can approach your George Carlin and share it with them and get feedback. That was quite brave, because very likely George Carlin is just going to savage somebody's work, and it's like asking Michael Jordan to give you feedback on your free throw or something. It's likely to not go well. But for Gary Shandling to get the incredibly high praise, which is basically there's something funny on every page, that's amazing. And here's hoping that you have your group of people that you can have a Saturday pickup basketball game with, or whatever your version of that is, to get around, share your work, be vulnerable, and let them help you make it better. We all need it. Thanks, y'all.